everybody. We've got a couple of really interesting and really cool episodes we're covering this week. But first things first, if you're watching along at home on YouTube, you may be going, what the heck's wrong with the camera? It's because my camera isn't working for some reason. I can't figure it out. So I've got a little backup camera going right now, and it's at an odd angle. It looks really weird. But the one cool thing is it throws a shadow on my shirt that makes it look like I spilled something all over myself. That's a shadow. It's a shadow. It's a shadow. The other cool thing is from this angle, it looks like I'm a beefy boy. Like I look like the beefiest man. It's just the foreshortening and the forced perspective. Like it looks really, I look like I'm better built than I am. But you know, like if you want the ideal Phil, there he is. Also, I'm posting some links again, to links to help out mutual aid and such in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities in general during this infestation by vermin. So if you want to help out, just go to, I don't know what it's going to be, just go to the link. If you're listening along at home, I'll have the link in the description of the episode. And just follow along and click on that and make any donations you can. Really appreciate it. But we got two episodes that we're going to be watching today that are just blow me away. Because one of them is based on a very important Berenstain Bears book. And one of them is based on what I called at the time one of the worst Berenstain Bears books I'd ever read. So this should be exciting. That's right. We're talking about Learn About Strangers and The Disappearing Honey. Won't you join me? Let's go. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. Your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week, I already told you what we're watching. We're watching the Saturday morning Berenstain Bears. The reason these two stories are so important is because at the time I recorded the Berenstain Bears Learn About Strangers, it was my first big two-parter, and it was back when I was still interviewing a lot of strangers, like people I'd never met. And I interviewed the media director of the Jacob Wetterling Center here in Minnesota. This was at a time when the Jacob Wetterling disappearance was still a disappearance. We still had no idea that case hadn't been resolved in the decades since it had happened. And I talked to the director about stranger danger, the concept of stranger danger in the 1980s, and how it's a flawed concept, how the things we should be teaching our children are not to be afraid of strangers, but how to interact with strangers in order to stay safe. And I can cover all that when we actually talk about the episode, but it was in prepping this episode and watching those episodes, or you know, getting them set up, that I realized my emotional response to the story of the Berenstain Bears Learn About Strangers, I believe, is from watching this when it originally aired. In my mind, this was actually like a primetime special, which it wasn't. It was just a Saturday morning TV show episode, but in my mind, it was much bigger and more grandiose than what I realize it is. The other thing is, in the second episode, the Berenstain Bears and the Disappearing Honey, based on the first-time reader, The Berenstain Bears and the Missing Honey, which is just another Berenstain Bears detective's book, but it was, I went back, go back and listen to my episode, The Berenstain Bears and the Missing Honey. It's from just after the one-year anniversary of this show. I was out of it, or a nightmare, or maybe I'd had something to drink before I started recording. It is a unhinged episode. Go find it. Go dig it up. Maybe I'll post it on YouTube. There's no visuals, but if you listen to me get gradually more and more unhinged about this book that I apparently did not like at all, we're going to see if the episode does it one better. So let's grab our buckets of popcorn, our jujubes, and our malted milk balls, some Sour Patch Garbage Pail Kids, or whatever they're called, some really disgusting nachos, the collectible drink popcorn bucket, I guess, that they would do. What would they do for that? I don't know. Brother Bear's mouth wide open with popcorn pouring out. And let's grab our tickets, get them ripped, and head on into the theater. And for those of you listening along at home, I'll catch you guys on the other side. I'm going to have to do an edit here because my entire setup is a nightmare. Taking off the hat. Got a bunch of hat hair. Going to throw on the old headiophones. Oh, yeah. The other thing is, if you're watching this on YouTube, I also couldn't source the episodes the way I have been. So you'll see. You'll see what happens when I start watching. It's a different experience. And here we go. Into the theater. I put my hat on because no one should ever see without my hat. And we're back. We watched two episodes. The Baron St. Bears learned about strangers, the Baron St. Bears, and the Disappearing Honey. You know we did because I told you up top that that's what we were doing. Okay. First off, Learn About Strangers was essentially the same book. Quick rundown, if you haven't read that book in a couple of decades. In the book, brother and sister enjoy hanging out together. Sister is far more gregarious than brother. She's very friendly. She greets and talks to everyone she encounters on their walks to and from the park, including people she doesn't know. And brother is mildly concerned about the fact that she's so chatty, not just with the frogs and the butterflies, but with people sitting on benches, people jogging by. She's just a friendly cub. And so she brings it up with Mama and Papa that sister talks a lot to strangers. And he tells her, like, you shouldn't talk to strangers. And she says, why? And he's like, let's talk to Mama and Papa about that. I'm not qualified to talk about it, which is true. So she talks to Papa, and he says that she should never talk to strangers. And she's like, what do you mean? Why? And so he shows her a newspaper full of stories, filled with stories of child abductions, which is wild. Like, you don't think of Bear Town as being that dangerous. I can only assume it's the news coming out of Big Bear City. So many child abductions and, like, child, like, stranger bothers cub being one of the headlines, whatever that means, that it freaks sister right the heck out. She wakes up the next morning. She doesn't want to go to the park. And when she finally does, she starts seeing every single person as a threat. So she talks to Mama about it. And this is the famous scene with the apples. Mama is washing apples to cut into a pie. And she's like, you don't have to be afraid. You shouldn't talk to strangers and you shouldn't accept gifts from strangers. But you don't have to be afraid of every stranger. Most people are fine. And she's like, I almost guarantee you that everyone at that park was fine. They wouldn't have hurt you at all. And so sister's like, well, how do you know the difference? And Mama's like, well, you don't, because you ever hear the expression, like, every bushel of apples has a bad apple in it? And sister's like, yeah. And she's like, well, here. She holds up this sort of, like, lumpy, misshapen apple, and she cuts it open, and it's nice inside. Then she holds up a nice-looking apple and cuts it open. It's full of worms. And sister's like, I get it, even though none of us get it, because what's the point that you made? What's the point that you can never tell what's going on inside or outside a person, so maybe their brain is full of worms? I don't know. It doesn't really, to me, that would just be like, anyone could be full of worms now. Like, even this beautiful apple's full of worms. So they go to the park the next day. Sister's not afraid anymore, but brother sees a guy with a remote control plane and watches the guy fly it. And the guy invites brother into his car to go along with them to, like, chase the plane with the remote control. Brother almost gets in the car with the stranger. Sister catches him, tattles on brother. And he gets a talking to by Mama and Papa. Sister says, we have a rule about talking to strangers. And brother's like, we also have a rule about tattletaling. To which Mama responds, it's not tattletaling. Tattling on someone is when you tell somebody that someone did something, you know, just to do it, just to get a rise out of people. But this is not tattling, because sister was genuinely concerned about your safety. And to me, and I said this while watching it, to me, that's the ultimate lesson of Learn About Strangers. Because when we talked with the Jacob Wetterling Resource Center 10-odd years ago, they emphasized repeatedly that stranger danger is a flawed system. Teaching children not to talk to strangers is an incredibly flawed system, because if a child is lost or in danger themselves, 999 times out of 100, that child is going to have to talk to a stranger in order to get help. There's not always going to be a policeman or a friendly shopkeep, like, you might have to approach someone. So what her lesson was, you don't teach children to never talk to strangers. You teach children how to talk to strangers, and you remember that it's not on the child to discern who is safe and who is not. Therefore, you teach the children to have the same reaction and response to everyone they meet, which is, you never get into a car with anyone without your parents' permission. It doesn't matter if it's someone they've never met. It doesn't matter if it's their own grandparents. Without their parents or their trusted adult, the answer is always the same. I will have to talk to my parents first. I'll talk to my mom first. I'll talk to my dad first. And you say that to everyone. And that way the child doesn't have to determine whether or not a person is safe. There's a general rule that applies to everyone. Even if it's a relative who comes up that the child knows very well, they still say, I'm going to have to talk with my parents first, because that takes the responsibility out of the child's hand. It makes it so that they are capable of approaching a person they don't know if they need help. And it puts the onus on the adults in the situation. So that's my response. This episode did a great job of illustrating the book, of taking the scary parts and making them just as scary, of illustrating the way Sister sees the world. The music was just bang on. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I want the music from this show. It's got just some great just bops in this particular episode. Learn about strangers. The hits just kept on coming, baby. The hits just kept on coming. I really enjoyed it. It's a good, solid episode. Again, and it was written by Stan and Jan. My only gripe is at the very beginning of the episode is this long-ish sequence of Sister trying to get Brother to hang out with her. And he keeps coming up with different excuses not to hang out with her. Mama's like, he's going through a phase. He wants to do his own thing for a while. Doesn't come into play at all. Feels like filler. Just feels like they're padding out the beginning, like the runtime a little bit, because it doesn't, Brother not wanting to hang out with Sister is not relevant to the story. I mean, it's a nice illustration of their dynamic, but it doesn't set you up for strangers at all. That's that episode. Okay, the next episode we watched was The Berenstain Bears, The Disappearing Honey. Now, the book it's based on is The Berenstain Bears and the Missing Honey. I don't know why they changed it to Disappearing. It is not in the process of disappearing. It has disappeared. The book was a rhyming book for little kids. And the basic story is Papa is very excited to crack open his store of boysenberry honey that he's been saving up all season for. He goes down into the basement to pick it up into his storage unit, and it's gone. It's gone. Someone has stolen all of his honey. And the bear detectives and their trusty dog Snuff set out to find the honey, and they find clues. They find a torn bit of clothing, red checkered plaid. They find a tuft of bear fur. They find a puddle of wax. And so they set out to find out who could have stolen the honey based on these clues. And all of their clues, Papa jumps the gun, and it leads him to nothing. They end up trashing an old man's candle shop, like an 80-year-old bear's candle shop, because they think he might, or Papa thinks he might be responsible for the wax that they found. I don't know why a candle maker would walk around with liquid wax, but in any case, it ends up with them at Grizzly Grand's house because they smell boysenberries. And she's like, that's my boysenberry tonic. But I'll look into my crystal ball, because remember, she's a warlock, a wizrobe. She looks into her crystal ball, and she determines that the honey is in the possession. The honey thief is Bear Country's greatest honey, number one honey lover. And that upsets Papa to no end, partly because he's not going to get his honey back, and secondly, because he thought he was Bear Country's greatest honey lover, number one honey lover. And now he realizes he must be number two. Now, amidst all this, Mama has been suggesting they ask the wise old owl, who is an owl, who was in the book and would come into play in many later bear detective books. I think Bear Scouts books, the little like sort of like flippity floppy, like tic-tac-toe mystery book and stuff. The wise old owl who just answers their question. Like he just gives them the answer to every mystery. This is like prototype wise old owl. Mr. Owl. Mama's like, you should ask Mr. Owl. You know, he kind of sees everything that happens. Finally, they ask Mr. Owl. They're like, Mr. Owl, what's going on? Because Snuff has led them finally to Papa's own bedroom. And in his dresser, they find his pajamas that have a piece torn out of them. And it's the piece, it's the fabric piece. And they're covered in honey. And Papa's fur is the same color as the fur they found. And so Mr. Wise Old Owl's finally like, look, I'm the night watch around here. I'm up all night. I see everything that happens. And for the last few nights, Pop has been coming out of his room, sleepwalking, heading into the cellar, and coming out covered in honey. I didn't think to tell anybody anything, and it wasn't my business. Basically, it wasn't my business. I didn't want to wake him up because you don't ever want to wake up a sleepwalker, which isn't true. And so they're like, oh, I see. So Pop has been sleepwalking and eating his own supply. Like, that's it. Pop has been eating his own supply. They all have a big laugh over it. Papa realizes he is the number one honey lover. And I said, honey lover. And that's it. That was the episode. And much better than the book. I'll say there's a little padding. There's a little, like, let's throw in a long gag of Papa falling down or whatever, because it's not a very long story. But it's very solid Saturday morning entertainment. But also, Papa spends the whole book, the whole story, suspecting his neighbors. It's got to be one of these people we live near who's stolen my honey. It could be this person. It could be. And the Cubs are like, Papa, these are your people you know. These are your neighbors. And I thought it was fascinating that two episodes in which two of our core cast learn to be suspicious of their own community were sort of just paired together. Like, they were like, these two episodes fit together because they're both about suspecting your neighbors and not trusting the people around you. And in both episodes, well, kind of the first one, but mostly the second one, they learn that their suspicions are unfounded. The community they've trusted, they can always trust. The community they've relied on, they can always rely on. It's only their own, like, it's only their own perception. That's made them afraid of the people in their community, which is a nice segue into me saying, talking about the fact that I live in a community where people are having to be very trusting of each other, because we're still under siege by the United States government, and there's a lot of mutual aid going on in the area. So if you have it in you to give, again, there's a link right over here or in the description of the episode, where you can send any kind of funds for mutual aid. We have people helping out neighbors who are afraid to leave their homes, get food, get supplies, get things like diapers, get things like get their laundry done. That's a big one. People are afraid to go to laundromats, so volunteers are taking their laundry and washing them in their own homes or in, you know, volunteer businesses. We have restaurants in town now that have gone completely free for their meals. Until this nightmare is over. But it does take funds. And so there's a couple of links that you can go to. Take a look at them and see where you want to give, if you want to give. And if you go to one of them and it looks like if there's a GoFundMe involved, and if it looks like there's a lot of money in that GoFundMe, and you're like, oh, I guess they don't need my money. Trust me, they do need the money. They are paying rent for people right now who can't pay their own rent because they can't go to work because they're afraid of being kidnapped. So if you have it in your heart to throw a few bucks towards the mutual aid here, really appreciate it. I know this is a very small platform, but I'm trying, doing what I can. It's all we can do. Because like the Berenstain Bears, I love this community. I love the people in it, and everyone has their place. Everyone is contributing. Everyone contributes in some way. It's just wonderful to have everyone here, and I want them to stay safe and stay here. So thank you all for joining me. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you all so much for being a part of the Deep in Bear Country family. And I will see you all next time with the last episode of season one of the Berenstain Bears, Deep in Bear Country.